You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready. Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception Perception, the show. We're back, baby. Matt, we're back. And we took a week off. Much needed time to recharge the batteries here. But we're back, and we're going to be hitting this thing pretty hard. This is what I've told people. This is where Matt Harmon shines, man. This is where Matt Harmon differentiates himself from the other football analysts out there. And I know for you in particular, you just loved going through the charting of both pro and the prospects too.
Yeah, and this time of year, it's funny because I feel like, and maybe this is like saying too much about I don't know, my own thoughts in my head at this time of year, but I feel like 90% of the people want me to just be charting prospects right now.
More than 90%.
Probably like 98% of people.
Yeah, exactly.
That being said, I did start charting prospects earlier this year, and we've talked a little bit about that on the show, and we'll hit on at least one prospect in this show later on today. So I am more ahead on prospects than I usually am.
Yeah.
But because of the way like I like to roll things out on the site, free agents do come first. And that includes guys that get franchised, like one guy we will again talk about later on this show today. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, just at this point, because I know I need a clear process, and also like in a couple of weeks, you know, free agency will be a big thing and people want to know about these guys. So I do think it's helpful to do the free agents first, but it is always just funny this time of year that the juggling between like, all right, people really want the rookies, and I am getting them up on the site earlier than ever, and that is great. I'm excited about this year's prospects. But while everybody's like, you know, fully talking about the combine right now and fully debating like this guy versus this guy, I am here like, all right, let's talk about T. Higgins and Mike Evans and like maybe some Darnell Mooney in a couple of weeks.
Darnell Mooney!
Because that's free agency, baby.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Let's go. I love it. Yeah, I think 98% probably are more concerned about the prospects. And especially this year, too, Matt. You talk about being a little bit earlier this year. You're going to have to be a little bit earlier this year because there's so many guys in this class that are really, really interesting. We're going to talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. in just a minute here, but we did talk about some free agent wide receivers. I think the two guys at the top of the list, it's however you want to prioritize these guys, whether it's age or talent, whatever it is. But T. Higgins, Mike Evans, I think will be at the top of pretty much everybody's list here. T. Higgins did get tagged. And then once he got tagged, Matt, I mean, speculation just running rampant that a tag and trade is possible. I don't know. Can you walk me through that? Because I'm a little bit confused. Like, why would a tag then also mean a trade is imminent? I guess I just don't personally see that.
Yeah. So I think, first of all, I had said that the three receivers that are probably the best receivers that are, quote, eligible for free agency this year are not likely to hit the open market. That is T. Higgins, Mike Evans, and Michael Pittman. We'll talk about Mike Evans in a minute. He's the one I've kind of changed my perspective on. But it always felt like T. Higgins was not actually going to hit free agency because,
right,
number one, players that good just don't hit free agency. It's very rare that guys that are and we can talk here in a second, because I've charted out T. Higgins's 2023 data. It's obviously going to be on the site on March 4th, I believe, Monday, March 4th or March 5th.
Yeah.
When the free agency drop comes, just because he's still a franchise type player, he gets included in that drop. And you know, we could talk about where he ranks, but again, I think consensusly he's probably like a top 20-ish receiver in the league. Guys that good just don't hit. They don't hit free agency, period. This is not how it works. Like, so especially guys that are in the prime of their career, like Mike Evans is different because of the age that he's at. And it's just like teams have every incentive in the world to control the rights on the player, like the Bengals do. They can slap the franchise tag on him, which is $21 million this year for wide receivers, right around that $21 million range. You know, if T. Higgins hit the open market, he might make damn near $30 million because, again, the way the position is a premium, the way that he is, he's so good, and that he is squarely in the prime of his career. So the Bengals have every incentive to franchise tag him. And I think they will listen to trade offers. I think any idea that it's imminent or he's definitely getting traded is probably just take clock, because people thought that was going to happen for some reason. But I don't think people realize that for this year, the Bengals had over $50 million in cap space before the projected, or before the cap was $30 million more than it was projected to be. Right now they're at $50 million, but they were already with just flush with cap resources this year, so they can afford to do this while still also staring down the expensive years of Burrow later on, and then obviously trying to get Ja'Marr Chase under contract at some point here.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many moving parts, but I'm kind of with you in that, is it like an off-season, you know, take cannon type of thing to say that T. Higgins, the trade speculation is running rampant now? Because again, I was kind of looking at these figures. I'm kind of looking at, you know, down the road, you know, what the figures are looking at for the Bengals. And yeah, I guess I just don't see it, you know. Look, we've been through this here recently, right, with Tyreek Hill and A.J. Brown. These are guys that wanted deals. They didn't get deals. And in the end, they ended up getting traded. Chiefs and Titans moved on from Tyreek and A.J. Brown. I think both receivers obviously were looking for these new deals that they just could not come. They got to an impasse, right? And the haul for both of these guys was just enormous. It's just different with T. Higgins, because as much as we like him, and as much as Matt is here telling you, and I'm agreeing, I'm shaking my head, yeah. T. Higgins is a great player. Top 20-ish is what Matt is saying, right? And these kind of players don't generally hit the market, and you're right. But the trade market for them, too, is also not as robust as it would be for a Tyreek and an A.J. Brown, two guys that I think would be and have shown to be transformative players. I think T. Higgins is a good player, you know, but he's not a transformative player. And that's why I don't think teams would be lining up to be offering a king's ransom to the Bengals to pry away T. Higgins. I don't know. That's just where I kind of stand on it.
Yeah, some of the early whispers have been maybe a late first or an early second. Everybody wants to connect the Carolina Panthers to this because they own the 33rd overall pick in the draft. They obviously do not own their number one overall pick, but they do own that second rounder, which is, for all intents and purposes, it's not a true first rounder because you don't get that fifth year option, but it's still a very valuable pick for a team like Cincinnati if you were to make this deal. But yeah, just I'm totally with you that there is not just a gap from the A.J. Browns and Tyreek Hills. And I mean, if you want to take it all the way back to Stephon Diggs when he got traded, there's not just a gap between where those guys are and T. Higgins. In my opinion, there is a significant gap from those guys to T. Higgins. Now, that doesn't mean that I like we're talking about, I don't think that T. Higgins is a really good player, because I do think he's a really good player. But we also don't even have proof of concept of him being like a number one receiver. Whereas obviously with Tyreek and A.J. Brown, we have like a true proof of concept of that. I think any idea that T. Higgins would be a number one without Ja'Marr Chase around there is purely a hypothetical. The complicating part of this with T. Higgins is that, I mean, he did not have a very good year last year. Even when you go back into reception perception, like, again, I told you, I just charted out his data. 68.7% success rate versus man coverage. That's his lowest mark since his rookie year. 68.8% success rate versus press. That's the lowest mark of his career. 73.9% success rate versus zone. That's the lowest mark of his career. Now, I'm not holding this, and this is difficult too, because I don't know how much to hold that against T. Higgins, and I don't even know if teams will care about that, because we know he was dealing with all kinds of injuries throughout the season and was clearly playing lower than 100%. Right. And he is also not as – this is why Ja'Marr Chase is just so much more of a valuable player than him. And anybody who's ever thought that there isn't a gap between those two players is crazy. Like,
right.
T. Higgins can only do, and it's a very valuable thing, but he's really just, he's a vertical throwback, even though he doesn't just purely play X because Ja'Marr can play X. He's like that throwback combative, like not possession, but like a vertical X receiver that's going to win in those tight
catch
cover
guy.
Situations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And he wasn't that good in contested situations last year again. Because
interesting.
I don't know what was going on there, but it just, like, I think some health factors are there. So that's what makes T. Higgins complicated right now. Again, if I was a team, like if I was Carolina and I was considering moving the 33rd overall pick for T. Higgins, mm-hmm. I don't know that I care that he didn't have his best season last year, because you can't explain it away via injuries. Yeah. And I think a guy that's in the area of his career that he's in right now, you're probably not going to sit there and say, like, oh, he's a declining player, or oh, we've already seen the best of T. Higgins. That would be right, nonsense. Right.
Yeah,
but it's
yeah.
just something to note of why this is complicated right now. Because anybody trying to get traded, you want to be coming, or going into free agency, you want to be coming off your best season. Even from an individual perspective, like the Joe Burrow injury, the quarterback stuff aside, T. Higgins was just not at his best last year.
So let me give some background information here. First of all, he's going into his age 25 season. Okay, so obviously a very young man. He started playing football in the NFL at 21 years old, right? So a very young man is T. Higgins. again, you talk about some of these career low marks. And again, that was reflected in the counting stats as well, right? A 55% catch rate, clearly well below his, you know, career average of about 65% coming into the year. He had 656 yards receiving, this following back-to-back 1,000-yard campaigns in 2021 and 2022. So, yeah, the counting stats were down. But all of this to me, Matt, I'm actually surprised that Cincinnati did not make, I don't want to say an aggressive push, to have a long-term contract extension done in place. But I'm a little bit surprised that they didn't push harder for it, because when a player is down like this, what is the true market for a player like this, right? And I think that the Bengals probably could have, if they were, again, pretty aggressive about it, like locked him in for a deal that, I don't know, wouldn't have been as crazy as people would have thought it would be, you know, for T. So I'm a little bit surprised that Cincinnati decided to go the franchise tag route and try to kick this can down the road, because, bro, if he puts on a big time year in 2024, then for sure they're not going to be able to afford T. Higgins. You know what I mean?
Well, I think the Bengals are looking at it a couple of different directions, which one, I mean, I do think that just tagging him right now does tell teams, like, if you want to make us a big offer for T. Higgins, I do think they would listen to an offer for,
yeah.
T. I think that is on the table. At the same time, you know, if they do want to, and Zach Taylor was quick to come out, this is what you do as the coach. You come out and you quickly say, T. Higgins has been a great part of our team, and I can't wait for him to continue to be a big part of our team.
Totally.
Like, you don't come out there and say, like, yeah, we're, you know, all this tag and trade stuff. Of course, that's not what a coach is going to say. It's not what he should say. But I think the Bengals will also keep that kind of conversation going with T. Higgins of, we tagged you to extend you at some point. Like, just because they put the tag on doesn't mean that they can't extend it. I think they have until July to actually fully give him a contract extension. And also, tagging him, just if you can't get a trade done, and maybe you don't want to get a trade done, which I think is defensible, then you just have T. Higgins around for one more year. I do think it's complicated, the future salary part of this, because if you sign T. Higgins to a top of market deal Which, if I'm T. Higgins and you don't offer me a top of market deal this year, playing under the tag sucks. No one likes to play under the franchise tag because of the lack of long-term security. But at the same time, if I'm healthier this year and Burrow's healthier this year, you're right, James, that he's probably going to ball out and then get a top of market deal elsewhere if he's able to hit free agency because they can't franchise tag him. So if I'm T. Higgins, maybe I have an incentive to try to take a hometown discount this year. And then it gets really complicated because I think allocating all those resources to three players, Burrow, Chase, because Chase is a guy you're definitely going to want to get a deal done with. And that's a lot to three players there. And you will then make a lot of concessions throughout the rest of your roster. And we already saw that kind of come to fruition on the defense this year, where there were guys that they said goodbye to. There was some kind of erosion down the spine of the defense, and the defense was terrible this year. And it was a big reason, obviously the Burrow injury being the biggest reason, but you know, they sacrificed on the defense to sign Orlando Brown, and that's just kind of the push and pull of roster building. And again, if you're going to have Higgins and Chase under contract at big top, near top market deals, that there's going to be a lot of pulling in one direction.
Okay, so you said Mike Evans. It's funny you mentioned Michael Pittman, too, because, God, he's really the player where I just wasn't even considering him in regards to free agency. That just seems like it's just there's no chance in hell Pittman is leaving Indianapolis. But you mentioned Mike Evans as well. Now, all of a sudden, it seems as if Mike Evans is likely to move on from Tampa Bay as they try to kind of, reconfigure their roster a little bit.
I don't know if I'd say he's likely to move on, but he is probably going to test the market. Since we recorded this, news was reported that the Bucs are likely going to use the franchise tag on Antoine Winfield, who is a safety, who's a stud, Pro Bowl snub this past year. And the tag for safeties is much cheaper than the tag for receivers. So you slap that tag on Winfield, you keep him around, and you keep it going. But there was also, and who knows with this stuff, obviously this can change, but there was a reported deadline that came and went that this was when the Bucks had kind of, we're going to break off extension talks with Mike Evans. And that was last week or a week and a half ago or something like that. So it sounds like Evans is going to hit the market. Now, that also coincides with Baker Mayfield probably hitting the market. And the Bucks have cap resources. They have $43 million in cap space. They're definitely one of these teams that's going to benefit from the cap going up this year. But again, those are two guys that in Mayfield and Evans that could get blown away by big offers elsewhere. And I think just Mayfield, just because he plays quarterback, and who's to say that some team that's just thirsty for quarterbacks isn't gonna
it would not be
what I would do, but again, you could see it happening.
I think
it would be psychotic on Baker's part too, just because even though Dave Canales is gone, you found success now in Tampa, you've moved around so much, you've had so many different coaching staffs and all this stuff, maybe you just want to stick with what you had last year. But the Evans part of it is definitely a concern here too. And I think, I wonder if the two situations kind of play into each other, because Mike Evans loves the Bucks. He's a Bucks lifer. They've had a great relationship. He's been there forever since 2015, great career. But I definitely think, again, there's some temptation of Mike Evans, maybe some team wants to come in. I mean, I just look at the Lions are such an obvious candidate because they have $57 million in cap space. And they could use a vertical playmaker on the outside. I definitely think there's some team that could really blow Mike Evans away with a big offer, even though he's an older player. And if the Bucs can't also retain Mayfield too, I think they'll give him something to think about. Ultimately, I think it's just hard for me to envision Mike Evans in another uniform, but I do think that there's at least a conversation to be had here.
There's so many different teams that obviously could use the services of Mike Evans. I don't even know if it's worth talking about all the teams because, golly, Matt, you saw it this year, man. I mean, there was just so many teams desperate for outside X receiver play. And Mike Evans, obviously one of the best to ever do it. You said you tracked him. Have you tracked him a little bit? I don't. Yes. I don't think you're through his full games. Oh, are you through his full?
I am. Okay. I finished. Oh, you finished this morning, actually, in prep for the pod. So
I am excited. So tell me, what are we looking at here with Mike Evans? I mean, from a visual, especially from a highlight bias standpoint, no degradation of skills or explosiveness, man. But what do the RP numbers tell you, though?
Yeah, so on the inverse of what we talked about with T. Higgins, where I think he had potentially the worst year of his 4-year career, Mike Evans definitely had one of his best seasons this past year, man, which you gotta love to see that. Okay, so a couple of numbers here. 73.1% success rate versus man. That was actually the best of his career. Wow. And again, this is a guy going back to 2014. He had a 75.4% success rate versus press, which was the second highest of his career, just narrowly losing, well, not narrowly, but losing to his 2021 career best of 79.1%. So Mike Evans had one of his best years last year, third best success rate versus zone. And again, this is a guy that, like, he's been around since RP's been a thing. Reception perception started tracking. I started tracking full league-wide data in 2014. That was Mike Evans' first year of his career. So, you know, I had a lot of experience with Mike Evans over the years. And one thing I've always said about Mike is that he is the most, like, in terms of superstar receivers, kind of like the most misunderstood guys, because people think of him as just a big jump ball receiver, but this guy is an awesome route runner. I've actually had a conversation with Mike Evans about this very factor of, like, why his game gets kind of stereotyped as one of these big jump ball receivers, but he's got just an ability as a route runner, I think, that's really underrated. An ability as a technician, the understanding the technical part of game that was really just super underrated. And, like, this is a great thing. If you're a Panthers fan, pay attention to what I'm about to say right now, because, man, the offensive coaching in Tampa Bay from a pass game standpoint was so encouraging. And I think the biggest thing that you can take and sort of compare and contrast here, Mike Evans' route tree in 2022, which I think really contributed to statistically a down season for him, and statistically kind of a season that got a lot of people not drafting, myself included, like, not drafting him in fantasy. Obviously, there was the Baker Mayfield factor, but you had to kind of wonder, like, all right, what's going on with Mike Evans here? Like, he was so volatile, but they had him run a go route in the 2022 Bucs offense on 27% of his routes. That dropped all the way down to 16.5% in the first year with Dave Canales. His slant routes go up from 12.6% to 18.5%. I mean, just the outbreaking routes too jump from the simple out route, 8% of his routes in 2022, 15%. And man, Mike Evans has been incredible on all those routes I just laid out there, like slants and outs and these type of things. Like, he's been great on those routes throughout the course of his career in the Byron Leftwich offense. And, you know, who knows how much of this is what Tom Brady wants or whatever, but it was just so, like, nauseatingly simple. Like, I know, again, Mike Evans, he is a dangerous deep threat. He can get the ball at any point, whatever. He's gonna crush you on these routes. But, like, we don't have to have him running a go route on almost 30% of his routes. That's just especially, and this is what makes me mad about it. In looking back at it, especially with the way Tom Brady was not trying to get hit, the way he was trying to get the ball out so fast and all that stuff.
Right.
It made no sense to do this with your best player. On the inverse, there, the Bucs, they expand and grow his route tree and, like, have him run more slants and stuff like that, because that's what Baker Mayfield's going to benefit from, getting the ball out quickly to a guy like Mike Evans, or he's able to, it just made so much more sense, the usage for Evans last year. So combine that with the, I think, just one of the best separation seasons we've seen from a guy who is already a really underrated and kind of misunderstood separator. Very encouraging 2023 results for Mike Evans.
It's surprising, especially at this point in his career, that they would reconfigure some of his routes, and especially to the degree that you're talking about, man. I agree with you that in 2022, what are we doing out here with Mike Evans? You know, like, Tom Brady's getting the ball out in less than 2 seconds. Like, how the hell is that supposed to get? How are you supposed to get the ball to Mike Evans? It's literally impossible.
When he's running a go route too, James, those routes are not even going to be developed in 2 seconds or whatever Brady was doing.
It's insane. It's just crazy. So again, I'll ask you this. Obviously, he put together a great season here. There's still a lot of juice left, a lot of tread on these tires. You know, what is the upside for a player like this? What kind of deal do you think this guy gets, man? Again, I know he's looking for something that's very respectable. It's not going to be top of the market, man. But again, I'm not, if it's anything less than, you know, 18 mil a year, I'd be surprised.
Oh yeah. I mean, I would be stunned if it came in that low. I agree with you on that. Brad Spielberger, does a great job in PFF about, like, they do all the rankings there. He does a great job comparing, like, past free agents and their resumes and to the current guys that are hitting the market to kind of give us, like, comparable contracts. He compared Mike Evans's 2022 season to Kenny Golladay from 2021, who, you know, he ended up getting a monster deal. And I think that that's probably a guy that's going to, I think he could exceed that. Right. So that's something that, you know, kind of gives you that. I think that, you know, like Davante Adams, just he signed a big deal with the Raiders as an aging player. Like, why couldn't Mike Evans ask for that same draft class? I don't know that he's going to get it, but that's, like, where I would put the asking price, and then you bring me down from there.
Right. By the way, I found this to be interesting. I just looked this up via Next Gen Stats, but so he's running way fewer nine routes, obviously, in 2023 versus 2022. And what ended up happening, though, was that he ended up just having, again, more production across the board on deeper routes, right? So any route that went over 20 air yards, he had more targets, he had more receptions, he had more yards, he had more touchdowns on again, all targets over 20 yards in 2023 with Baker Mayfield versus 2022 with Tom freaking Brady, right? So yeah. It's interesting when they reduced his number of nine routes and gave him a more varied route tree, the exact opposite ended up happening, is that when he ran those nine routes, when he ran those posts, when he ran the corner routes, he got the ball more. You know what I mean? So it's just doesn't it make more sense too, Matt, where you're like, yeah, you know, if we mix it up and the coverage doesn't know the defense doesn't know exactly what this guy's going to do, we could actually probably unlock him down the field instead of just throwing him into a brick wall over and over again.
Well, and I do think it's worth saying that, you know, Tom Brady of 2022 just wasn't the same Tom Brady that we've been accustomed to. So that's where, like, obviously in name value, it's shocking to say, like, yeah, he was better with Baker Mayfield from a production standpoint. But, like, Baker played really well last year in Tampa Bay.
Oh, he did.
And yeah. I think the pass protection was better. People don't talk about this enough with that Bucs offense, that they took Tristan Wirfs, who'd been a star at right tackle, and moved him to left tackle, which is a risky proposition, even though he had played on the left side in college. Like, still, it's a, you know, you're just moving a guy around a lot, whatever. But he was awesome, was Tristan Wirfs at left tackle. And then Luke Kadecki kind of had a really good year at right tackle. Like, that offensive line just played much better overall than people were expecting, which gives Baker the time to sit there and let those deep routes develop. And yeah, you could not be more right that when you're not just, it's similar with running backs, right? Like the slam in the head over and over again, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Like you're not just running that guy into the safeties down the field and you're actually being smart about it. The way they designed those routes for, like, these big plays off play action as well, which they were much better about running play action
right
this year than the previous or last year, as opposed to that 2022 Bucs offense. So that can't be understated in terms of being a big part of what's going on here. Again, this is all just like another feather in the cap for Dave Canales, who I've said, like, I'm pretty high on as an offensive play caller and offensive designer. He's obviously not going to be in Tampa, so all of this stuff is like, we'll see how that, like, Liam Cohen comes back from.
We'll see. Oh, boy.
Going back and forth between pro college. Like, now he's the offensive coordinator there in Tampa. That is kind of an unknown. We'll see about all that. And, yeah, I mean, for Mike Evans, just like any team that needs an outside X receiver, if he hits the market, like, I do keep coming back to the Lions because, man, that would be so sick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It really feels like, you know, Josh Reynolds is up for free agency this year. It's like, imagine they take out Josh Reynolds and they throw in Mike Evans. Like, I mean, that no disrespect to Josh Reynolds, or Josh Reynolds, who's a solid player, but like,
yeah,
that's just taking your offense up a notch. The Titans and Commanders have a bunch of cap space, but like, I mean, come on, Mike Evans, if you're Mike Evans and you're getting blown away by a big offer from the Titans or Commanders, like let's be choosy about where we're going. If we're going to upend our life, those are not two teams I would think about going to, but yeah, I mean, the Lions again, come back to it. The Texans have a ton of cap space, but do they need a receiver? You can argue that for sure. I think they're probably set at that position. Quietly, the Rams also have a lot of cap space, and they're sort of in that window, right? I know they just kind of swung and missed on Allen Robinson when he was an aging free agent, but like, Mike is coming off a much better year than Robinson was when he hit free agency, and that's a pretty natural fit there. So, and obviously there's the Chiefs. Everybody talks about the Chiefs. They don't have the oodles and oodles of cap space right now that some of these teams do, but they could restructure Pat Mahomes. They can move some money around. I know they have big defensive free agents to consider here too, but still, obviously I think they should and would get in the mix at least a call on Mike Evans if he was.
Yeah, they 100% should. That's obviously the obvious one because of the Super Bowl champs. I think the Ravens, to be honest with you, should make the call. this is a team that has spent the second fewest amount of their cap space on wide receivers, right? The Falcons have spent, and again, obviously this is because Drake London's on a rookie deal, but $8.5 million on wide receivers in 2024. Baltimore Ravens have $9.6 million, you know, locked into wide receivers as well. So, and that's the second lowest in the NFL, according to Spotrac. So this is a team that, again, you put him in there with Zay Flowers, and they try to find a little bit of magic here with Odell, move on from Odell, bring in Mike Evans, and pair him up with Zay Flowers. And, man, yeah, we could be cooking with something here, man. You know, I know they want to get a little something with Odell, and obviously the injuries to Bateman, I think are starting to take their toll too, but how about Bateman, Zay Flowers, and Mike Evans going along with the reigning MVP? Come on, let's go.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential to mix up routes for guys like Bateman and Evans and kind of have their roles be a little interchangeable, because that was what was cool about the Bucs last year. It's obviously, you know, you're mostly running Mike Evans out as a pure outside receiver X, you know, because he's that guy. But there are also times in Tampa last year where they did move him around the formation. 23.9% of the snaps I sampled, he was in the slot. That was a nice number to see for him. You can get opportunities for Zay. Like, I think Zay Flowers is a guy who could play all three positions. I think Rashad Bateman is a guy who could play all three positions. And so you can have these guys sort of do different things. And, yeah, I mean, I still think Bateman's a really fantastic route runner. He's definitely been a guy that's lost some explosiveness and all that type of stuff. So I think there's still something there with Bateman. There will probably decline his fifth-year option, but keep him around to maybe grow under a guy like Mike Evans. I love that signing. It would definitely be – because I think they're Baltimore, it feels like every year they need a receiver, but they still need a receiver.
they do.
They just always end up drafting them, and then, you know, that player ends up, other than Zay Flowers, ends up, you know, becoming like a bust or injury marred or whatever, and that's been the kind of the way it's – I can't imagine them using another, like, early draft pick on a receiver, but they definitely – because Beckham, I think, probably is not coming back to this team, or if he does, he's going to be on a much lower role, and, like, once we get past Mike Evans, who probably hits the open market, then we're, you know, the next best guy is like Calvin Ridley. I don't think they need another like small separator. You know, you're talking about like Marquise Brown. I don't think he's about to be a Raven. I don't think. And then it's like Gabe Davis. We don't need a Gabe Davis type. Like, let's shoot for the moon with Mike Evans. I like that call by you.
Okay. So what are your thoughts here going from the program to the collegiate game here? But Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't know. This was a little bit eyebrow raising. Like, I get it. Like, he's going to be a second generation pro. He probably feels like, maybe his dad feels like, I know the business enough and, you know, I can navigate you into the right direction. But Marvin Harrison Jr., Matt, not hiring an agent, which I think is fine, especially given the rookie pay scale. But then also declining to test at the combine, which, okay, you know, you start adding these things up, you're like, all right, I got an eyebrow raised now. But then he also said he's not going to run at the pro day at OSU. Yeah. Hold up now. Wait a second now. Now for sure my eyebrows are raised here, okay? Like, we haven't really seen that for a player who is not injured, especially for a player that's not a quarterback. Now, we've seen sometimes quarterbacks opting not to do certain things along the way, which is fine. All these players have a right to do that. But I definitely, my antenna was raised here, okay, when I heard the trifecta of no agent, no combine, no pro day.
I think there have been a couple of other prospects that have done this recently, like Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle. Waddle wasn't 100% healthy, but Devonta Smith, right, I think, realized that there's and Harrison's a much higher rated prospect than even Smith was, who just won the friggin' Heisman. Like, because there was Jamar Chase in that class and everything, and Devonta, I believe, went, you know, like 11th overall to the Eagles, but Harrison, I think, is going to be a top five pick. I think these guys, just in their head, there's nothing really to gain, and there is a little bit to lose, which you could sit here and ask yourself, like, well, why are you concerned about something to lose or whatever? Like, hey, well, Marvin Harrison, why don't you just go light up the combine, make everybody, or your pro day, because the combine I can get, because there are other, the combine is
correct.
We're gonna have to have a kind of a come to Jesus moment about the combine here soon, because it's so much more manicured and orchestrated than it even has been in the past, because agents are involved now about, like, all right, well, you know, you're going to blow this drill, just don't run it. Like, don't even do it. The fact that they moved the testing back so that it could be more of a TV event, that's another thing. So, and what I think people don't realize is that this is, and this was sort of in the kind of announcement about Marvin Harrison, is that he's not going to train for the combine or train for his pro day, because he's going to continue to train to be an NFL wide receiver, which I get that, because I think what people don't realize is, like, to run a 40-yard dash and run it really well, like, you do have to train. You have to, like, the track guys know what they're doing, but, like, you got to work on the start. You got, like, this is something that these guys literally train for. So Harrison is just doing, like, the, what do you need to see me do a track event for? Just go watch the film, because that's the stuff I'm working on all year long. And, like, I do kind of get that. The quarterbacks are not – a lot of these quarterbacks are not testing at the combine. Like, Caleb Williams is not throwing. Jaden Daniels is not even going to run. I would think that he would run. But all this does tell me is that, yeah, like, I don't have questions about Marvin Harrison that I need to see answered at the combine. But it does tell me that in the back of – him and his team and all, like, because whether he has an agent or not, it doesn't matter. Like, he still has a team of people around him, including his father. They're all like, we don't want you going out there running a 4.5. And then it's like it's a talking point, right? Because, Marvin Harrison, I thought he was a big freak, whatever. Now he runs damn, 4.5 at the freaking combine and people freak out about it. meanwhile, I think Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze are going to test and they're probably going to light that thing up.
Right.
I just don't think they even want to have that conversation. So they're just not going to do it.
I don't know, man. I mean, I get it. You know, work on the football skills. Football skills greater than the 40 time. Of course. No one's saying it's not. But at the same time,
but James Coe loves himself a 40 time, and he especially a big receiver. Like,
I need it.
If anybody needs it,
I need it. All right, I'll be 100% honest. I need it. All right, inject that into my veins, baby. No, but I mean, again, it's part of the process, man. I don't know. Just again, if it was one of those things, I don't care. If it was two of those things, I kind of sort of don't. It's all three of those. Like, you're not going to run at the pro day too now. That seems a little bit odd to me. You know, a lot of these guys opt not to run at the combine. That's cool. You know, that's fine. You want to run the fastest time possible? Great. Do it at the pro day. This guy's not going to run at the pro day. He's not going to do anything. And he's just like, well, you seen my tape? Go draft me. I was like, all right, well, I mean, there's something there, I guess. But, man, I don't know. Like I said, my antennas are raised here for Marvin Harrison. That's all.
I feel you. It's weird and it's different. I do. Again, this is just, I think, what is going to become of the process. I kind of have mixed feelings on the whole, like, GPS time thing. But I think more and more you're going to see teams I'm sorry to tell you, James, but, like, the 40 time for receivers mostly doesn't even really matter for the most part. It's fun to see. I'm in support of the combine just because, like, I want to see. This is why we like sports, right? It's crazy to see human beings do some crazy stuff. That's what we like. That's exciting and it's fun. I think the combine is fun because of that. But whether Marvin Harrison was a 4.50 guy or a 4.45 guy, like, that to me is not going to move the needle, right? Because I do know who the player is, and I think these teams will have access to GPS numbers and all that, and apparently that stuff's all, like, his previous testing stuff that teams have access to, like, where he has worked out before. I'll pull it up here on Twitter while we're talking, because it was everywhere this morning,
right?
You know, it's teams are going to feel comfortable standing on that. Now, we're not going to get that information for everybody on the outside. It's not always going to leak. This was from Albert Breer's article, I believe, is where this is from. But, you know, Harrison had weighed in previously at 6'3", 206. He benched 380 pounds this offseason, doing reps 220.
Good God.
22 reps at 225.
Good Lord. What?
3.94 pro shuttle time. 10.9 on the broad jump. 23 miles per hour on the GPS.
Let's go.
I'm pretty sure that was from this Albert Breer article. But, yeah, so this Good is night. The stuff that teams are going to – like, again, Marvin Harrison, his team's going to be like, see, you have this 23 miles an hour on the GPS and you know I'm this big guy. You don't need to see me run in the 40, and I don't need to waste my time training for this event, training to be a track athlete when I'm going to sit here and train to be a great football player. That's their argument. And, yeah, again, you know, people can feel about it one way or another.
I will say this, too. The great Lance Zierlein did bring up a great point that, you know, as you mentioned, you know, Malik Nabers probably going to test out the freaking gym, right? Like, it's going to be great. And there are teams that view Nabers as potentially a better prospect than Marvin Harrison. If Marvin Harrison doesn't care about where he gets drafted, because he knows he's going somewhere in the top eight, then I guess you know, from a logical standpoint, who cares if Neighbors ends up getting drafted ahead of me? What do I care if I get drafted fourth or fifth or sixth? You know, what difference does it make? Which I get. But again, I just, like I said, it's just different, man. It's just different. You know, these guys usually do care about getting drafted. I want to be the first wide receiver drafted. I want to be here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to get drafted as high as possible. I'm just saying, it's just different, man. It's just
different. Dude, this is a different world that we live in now, man. I'm telling you, these things are going to start to change from the outside perspective. So I'll just say this on this top three receivers this year.
Yeah.
I think they're all great. I think people are going to waste time arguing about, well, Malik Neighbors is my wide receiver one. Uh-huh. Marvin Harrison is my wide receiver two. Or, guy one. He's my 1A, and this guy's my 1B. Hate to break it to you, folks. And I've definitely done the 1A, 1B thing. I have since canceled 1A, 1B. We don't do that on Reception Perception anymore.
Okay.
Because you want to know what? A is the first letter of the alphabet, and there B is the second letter of the alphabet. So what you're saying there is that guy's number one, and this guy's number two. Okay, so just from my exposure to these guys, and you know, this is, I've only charted a handful of games. I'm not through the full samples yet, but the way things are tracking, I'm going to give top 10 rankings to all three of these guys: Roma Dunze, Malik Neighbors, Marvin Harrison, who I said earlier is going to rip up the combine. He's apparently not. He's actually not going to run until his pro day. So keep that in mind. So we won't see him tear up the combine. But where these guys rank, like 1, 2, 3, I don't care. I think I'm not sitting here like going to fight you on you like Malik Neighbors and I like Marvin Harrison. That stuff's a waste of time. Honestly, all of it's probably going to be dictated by circumstance, who ends up being the best player anyways.
Totally. Landing spot's way more important. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
People who try to like say, oh, no, you shouldn't change your dynasty rankings or whatever based on landing spot. Yeah, you should. Okay? Like, just
talking
imagine.
About, of course you should.
There are stupid things you can do about it, and this actually is a great example. Like, you should never have ranked Quentin Johnston ahead of Zay Flowers just because he went to Justin Herbert. Quentin Johnston was not as good of a prospect as Zay Flowers, okay? Like, that is not hindsight analysis. You can go look at anything I said about those guys at the time.
Right.
People were definitely too high on Quentin Johnston. That just is what it is. Now, on the flip side, though, this year, because I think all three of these guys are top 10 ranked players, whatever, like, one guy goes to, I don't know, let's just be extreme here and say the Patriots at pick 3, and then another guy goes... The Chargers are, like, I actually don't even want to say this just because I want people to mentally prepare for the fact that they are either taking a tackle or trading down. They're not going to take one of these receivers. So, like, get your heart, mind, and soul ready for that to happen. But just hypothetically, one of these receivers goes to the Chargers at the 5th pick. All things being equal, talent pretty close. You're going to want the guy that goes to the Chargers more than the guy that goes to the Patriots 100%. Catching passes from Russell Wilson or something this year, okay? So that's just where we're at. It's like and then in the mainstream, you know, kind of zeitgeist of ranking players, comparing players, whoever ends up going to that better landing spot is going to have a better career and be the, quote, better player. But because, again, I think all things being equal, these three guys are very, very close. And how you rank one over the other is probably going to come down to like style and what you like in receivers.
To your point, though, basically, when we're talking about dynasty rankings, if there's a huge talent gulf, then obviously the landing spot, you know, it all factors into it. It's the landing spot, the talent gulf, like all these things, you throw them into the pot. Right. And that's how you end up with some of these dynasty rankings, man. It's not linear. I mean, and I'll say this too, more than any other sport, especially like basketball, the prospect is the prospect in basketball. LeBron's going to be LeBron. It don't matter. He goes to Cleveland. It don't matter if he goes to New York. It don't matter. LeBron's going to be LeBron. You know what I mean? But in football, it matters. You know, it's not like Malik Neighbors or whatever. He can't throw the ball to himself, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, I hate to quote Tom Brady's ex-wife and everything, but you know, he can't throw the ball to himself. Okay. Anyways, so I don't know. All that stuff does matter. But yeah, my antennas were raised when I heard that Marvin Harrison wasn't going to do the pro day, the combine, and not hiring an agent. I'm like, okay, he hit the trifecta here. I'm like, all right, we'll move on.
James is just pissed that he's not running a 40 because he wanted to see it.
Oh, 100%.
Don't let him lie.
100%. Dude, are you kidding me? Of course. I need that time. All right, I need that time, damn it. Anyways, all right, speaking of the college game, Bro, how batshit crazy is it? And people aren't talking about this enough. Eric Bieniemy going back to college. He's going to be the UCLA OC of all things. Like, what? Eric Bieniemy? I mean, yeah, golly. And if you think about this guy's career trajectory too, I don't want to say he fumbled the bag, bro, but like we're talking about he left the KC organization because people weren't giving him enough credit in Kansas City for being, you know, an offensive architect or whatever, right? Because as long as you got Andy Reid there, he's always going to garner all the credit. Eric Bieniemy wanted to be a head coach in the NFL. Kudos to him. He then goes to Washington to work with Ron Rivera, which I thought, hey, smart move. Okay, ain't nobody gonna give offensive architect, you know, flowers to you know, Riverboat Ron, for God's sakes, right? So if Washington's offense does well, Eric Bieniemy gets all the credit. Immediately the offseason reports weren't that great about Eric Bieniemy, and you know, and then obviously we've got some, you know, quarterbacking issues here and there with Washington, but man, no one ever saw this man going from Washington's OC to the UCLA OC. Like, that's crazy to me.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, I mean, this is the risk in what Eric Bieniemy did, like we're saying, because no question about it, there was obviously the limiting factor in Kansas City that you want to put down his resume, or like Super Bowl winning OC, you know, on the staff with Pat Mahomes, the whole thing. Well, Andy Reid's really the mastermind of it. Now, obviously, I think most people will point out the hypocrisy, and this is very true, that like Matt Nagy never faced those accusations. Doug Peterson never faced those accusations.
100%.
And everything that comes with all that, like those guys didn't have to stand down that. Those guys got head coaching jobs because they were on the Chiefs staff. Okay. So it was always hard to parse out the credit there. So I think in Eric Bieniemy's mind, he's like, all right, I'm going to go to Washington. Like you said, if the offense is good in Washington, he will get all the credit. He will be able to build his resume off that.
Right.
The problem is, though, the offense wasn't good in Washington,
right,
man.
Right.
They were, and we've talked about that a lot on this show. I think that the design flaws of the offense were worse, in my opinion, than the quarterback play. And obviously, I called Sam Howell's stats fake or empty calories.
Empty calories.
Washington fans didn't like it.
They lost.
Not that it matters because Sam Howell's not going to be your quarterback, so you shouldn't care about it at all anymore at this point. But
unbelievable.
They ended up on the year 18th in offensive success rate, and they were 25th in EPA per play. They were not a above average offense last year. They had protection issues, which I think some of that's on Sam Howell, some of that is on the offensive coordinator. Your guy is taking an absurd amount of sacks. Help him out, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We don't need Terry McLaurin running clear out routes for Byron Pringle and De'Ami Brown. Like, we really don't need that. Okay,
no.
So there was just a lot of issues in this offense in Washington, and just like when all the spotlight is on you and you would get all the credit if it was good. Well, now there's no one else to pass the buck to.
It stops with you.
And this was a failed experiment. I do think maybe Eric Bieniemy would have landed in a better spot if you know, Washington's coaching staff took a long time to come together because they were clearly, I think, holding out for Ben Johnson. Then Ben Johnson kind of sort of leaves them at the altar, so they pivot to Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury and all that. And now Bieniemy said he left Washington. They didn't leave him. I don't know. You know, I know he took some interviews elsewhere. I think like Chicago talked to him potentially about their OC job.
But right.
Yeah, again, I think this comes down to the fact that he had a shot to really prove himself. And, you know, for some reasons that were not his fault, a lot of reasons that I think were his fault, that proving ground, that proving season didn't go very well.
I don't know. The certain players, I think, have come out, and it's been a little bit mixed bag in regards to Eric Bieniemy. Some players have really said he's great. Other players have said, see, I told you. This is what was going to happen. So, I don't know. It hasn't been – it's not as if – all the players are gushing about him. You know, I think he's been very, I think with his coaching style too, I think he has been very polarizing. I think he's been a very polarizing person.
Like you said, there were reports in training camp that he was like just too hard on, I mean, he was super hard on the guys, and they went to Rivera and were like, hey, you know, this is not, and that's, whatever you think about that or not, like there's definitely, and I think good coaches have come to realize this, like there's a way you handle players now that's different than, you know, 10 years ago. And, you know, I think some, like I said, I think good coaches across the league have come to terms with that, and they act differently towards players. And, you know, Bieniemy's style was definitely described as like old school and kind of harsh, and very demanding. I mean, we'll see how that works. You could do that in college, right? You can be really hard on these guys because it's college. Sure. So maybe he ends up being – and he's had some coaching experience in college too. So,
It's just crazy. Who does this, man? When you are – I don't know. I don't want to say he's on a short list, but, you know, he's on the cusp. Sir, even after the failure in Washington, I would say he's certainly on like a list of like – what would it be like? 20 guys, 25 guys that you would consider for a head coaching position, you know? Now, he seemingly for the past, you know, 4 or 5 years has always been, oh, we love Eric Bieniemy, but we like this guy more, right?
Yeah.
But he's certainly still on the list. And by the way, I'm not trying to throw shade at UCLA. My wife went to UCLA. Like, I love UCLA. Like, I'm a big Pac-12 honk. Okay, I love UCLA. But he's going to UCLA. Okay, like he's gonna. I mean, this is a place that just hired a 44-year-old first-time head coach in the great Deshaun Foster. We love him in fantasy. All right, or whatever it might have been. Oh, hey, listen, we love Deshaun Foster. Okay, we love Deshaun Foster. All right, but keep in mind, UCLA is the place that Chip Kelly left. He left the head coaching gig to be an OC. At Ohio State, that's how not desirable this job is. Chip Kelly was a head coach, and he's like, nah, I'm good. I'm just going to be an OC somewhere at Ohio State. That's crazy to me, bro. UCLA is not that desirable of a destination. Not only you, not the head coach, Matt. So, and that's the other thing. If you want to be the head coach at UCLA, all right, I get it. Right, like you're gonna put that on the resume. Hey, listen, I was a head coach. I understand what it takes to be a head coach. Get it, got it, love it. No, he's being the OC for a 44-year-old first time head coach in Deshaun Foster at UCLA. That's not a good look, man. That is not a good look. I'm actually stunned. I was stunned and shocked that Eric Bieniemy would take this job.
Yeah, I think maybe he looks at it as well. Again, I think the timing of when all this went down, like most of the offensive coordinator jobs were filled because Washington was one of the last to hire Cliff Kingsbury as their offensive coordinator. So I think there just wasn't a seat at the table available to be a coordinator. And did he want to go back to the Chiefs? And, you know, you're not going to demote Matt Nagy down back to quarterbacks coach and then like, all right, now Eric Bieniemy's back to being the offensive coordinator. So it's like, do you take a lesser role on the staff as like senior offensive analyst or something like that? Because I think that's what he would have had to settle for to stay in the NFL. And I think if you're going to be generous about this, and I don't know if he thought about it this way, but I would be thinking about it this way. If I'm Eric Bieniemy and I'm looking, who Eric Bieniemy refers to himself in the third person anyway, so he would actually say this. If I'm, which By the way, red flag.
Big time. Big time red flag.
Big red flag.
Big time.
Big red flag. If I'm Eric Bieniemy and I'm looking in the mirror and I'm thinking, all right, like Eric Bieniemy's offense was not that good last year. I actually think that maybe going down to the college level and infusing it with some new ideas, because that looked like a old stale offense last year, like very basic drop back stuff that didn't really work together. Maybe he can go down to the college level and like kind of infuse that with some new ideas, but that's not as much as it like appealing as it used to be, man, because so much of what works in college doesn't track to the NFL.
Right.
That's problematic. I think the way you deal with players is just so different on the two levels. I don't know, man. Maybe he ends up being a really good college coach, but it's definitely a tough move.
I was surprised, man. By the way, we mentioned Deshaun Foster. I had to go look this up. Okay. Longtime Panther, as we know. John Fox was his head coach. Played with Jake Delhomme almost exclusively as his quarterback there. His best year, Deshaun Foster, came in 2005. 1,250 total. So 1,251 total yards there. Three touchdowns. Was never a big touchdown guy, was Deshaun Foster. Averaged 4.3 yards per carry in that 2005 season. But 1,251, that's pretty good. That's not bad. A 6-year career in the NFL for Deshaun Foster. So anyways, I know people were wondering about that. Like, I've heard Deshaun Foster. How do I remember that name? There you go. That's how you remember that name.
Foster lived like the full life cycle of a fantasy running back, which is like you definitely have your moment in the, and this is like weird Panthers lore, you know, from the days when I was really a big fan, but he lived long enough to be like a, 2005, he was a really exciting, second round pick, I believe, by the Carolina Panthers. And like, he had his moment where he was like, yeah, let's get this guy the ball and like mix it up. Cause they had Steven Davis, who had in 2005, 549 yards and 12 touchdowns, 3.1 yards per carry. It's like, all right, yeah, Foster, give him a little something. But then by 2007, the Panthers had used a first round pick on a guy named D'Angelo Williams. And if you were stupid enough to be watching Panthers football back then, you just, all you wanted was more D'Angelo Williams, because that guy was so, I mean, he was so good. He was just clearly a guy that was explosive, do a ton. And you just look at that 2007 stat line, 3.5 yards per carry for Deshaun Foster, 5.0 for D'Angelo Williams. So every running back eventually becomes like, oh, enough of this guy. Let's get the next one in there. Like that is classic fantasy football stuff. And then obviously D'Angelo, they move on from Deshaun Foster that offseason. They actually draft Jonathan Stewart, but still D'Angelo Williams in 2008 led the league with 18 rushing touchdowns the next year.
Wow. By the way, man, I'm looking at this 2007 Panthers roster. Wow. What a roster. Okay. First of all, that
was an awful year of Panthers. Dude,
what? Okay. First of all, Jake Delhomme, was a quarterback, but they also played David Carr, Vinny Testaverde, and Matt Moore. Oh my God. You had no chance.
I don't blame anybody for turning off the podcast at this point. We're talking about this, but people don't remember, like, Jake Delhomme in 2007 came out and was pitching heat in those first three games. 8 touchdowns to 1 interception.
Wow.
8.6 adjusted yards per attempt, a 100.8 passer rating, and then he promptly messed up his elbow and had to have Tommy John surgery. It was out for the rest of the year. And yeah, then they had Vinny Test. They had David 44, Carr, I think.
44 years old.
Yeah.
Vinny Testaverde. Woo!
They had to call him out of retirement because David Carr, God bless him, was such a disaster. That was David Carr's like second team because he busted out with the Texans.
Yeah.
And then, Vinny Testaverde comes out there and he was terrible. Good 5 touchdowns, Lord. 6 picks. And then they get Matt Moore out there and it was kind of like, let's see what Matt Moore's got, who's an undrafted rookie free agent. So again, I really don't blame anybody for turning off the podcast at this point, but that was how that ended. And then Delhomme comes back in 2008 and was they ended up going on a bit of a run because the team was great. That I mentioned that run game, but Delhomme not a fun ending to that season in 2008.
Oh my goodness!
Against the Arizona Cardinals in the playoffs.
By the way, one of your favorite players was on this team, Steve Smith Sr. Obviously, 148 targets, 87 receptions, 1,000 yards. But man, I'm looking at who played behind him, bro. Oh, Kerry Colbert, Dwayne Jarrett. This was those long string of USC wide receivers that just completely flamed out in the NFL. But Kerry Colbert and Dwayne Jarrett. Oh my goodness. Who the hell is Drew Carter?
Drew Carter, baby. Jeff King, who is second Drew on that Carter? Team in 2007 with 80 targets. 80? Jeff King.
Oh my God.
Do you remember your favorite Jeff King playing the NFL? No, you don't.
No.
Of course you don't.
What are you talking about?
Of course you don't.
Who is? I don't even know who Drew Carter is, for God's sake. What's going on here? This is great. Yeah, everyone's turned off the podcast by now, but that's okay.
Please, God, if you're still listening to this, let us know that you've made it to the end of the podcast to hear about the 2007 Carolina Panthers. What
True
a disaster
fan.
Of a season.
Unbelievable. Okay, so there's that's the show. Yeah, this is good stuff. We're going to be getting a lot more charting data out here. I don't know, maybe.
Was that? I don't know. I think we had some good stuff over the course of this podcast.
Oh my God.
I'm not sure that it ended well.
Talking about Kerry Colbert to finish it out. You don't think that was you don't think that was a good yeah, okay. Anyways, what a show. What a show we had here today. What a roundabout show we had. But it was a lot of fun. Anyways, we're going to catch you guys here in a couple of days. Actually, sans Matt, I'm going to be here with a guest. TBD on the guest, okay? But we'll have a guest here in the next couple of days. Matt's taking care of some things, but he will be back on the podcast next week. But till then, man, we appreciate y'all. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. And remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.